had a great career. I had some good fights, a good knockout ratio, all that stuff. And all the people, people always ask me, why'd you quit so early? It was just something like in me that was just, I didn't want to get back into it again. I mean, I knew he was good, you know. I don't know how good, I know he'd be like this, what he is now. You know, he was more of a counter puncher. He had a lot of power. So, I mean, if he hits you, you're done.
Hello, and welcome to Boxing Life Stories with me, Tristix.
What happened in the ring after Tyson Oligo was child's play compared to that one?
I still get goosebumps to this day.
you couldn't take the tears from his eyes or the smile off his face, could you?
I know.
He's beaten me. He's the one that brought you back.
In the paper, they made me look like Al Capone.
This is going to be your night.
There's winning, and there's nothing else.
Hello and welcome to Boxing Life Stories. This week I've been in Las Vegas, where I spent time with former featherweight contender Augie Sanchez. Augie was born and bred in Las Vegas. He was the last American to defeat Floyd Mayweather, and he also beat Diego Corrales and a whole host of big amateur names on his way to fighting Floyd in the box-offs for a spot in the 1996 Olympic team. Augie is now training fighters in the DLX gym in Las Vegas, and he's a committed family man, and his wife is his childhood sweetheart. Augie won 25 fights, lost just 3, and knocked out or stopped 23 of his victims. He boxed, among others, Jorge Paez, Luisito Espinoza, Daniel Jimenez, and of course Prince Nassim Hamed, who stopped him in 4 rounds of a thriller. I first met Augie about 10 years ago in another Las Vegas gym and interviewed him for Boxing News, and it was great to catch up with him last week. He's still in great health, and we discussed that here, and this interview took place in a red-hot Las Vegas. We met at Starbucks, but the background noise was too loud, so we sat outside and melted. However, this was a lot of fun to record, and despite the heat, the time flew by. Huge thanks to my sponsors, Hanson Lee Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do Hanson Lee find you the best people, they'll help you retain them. And you can find out more at hansonlee.com. We're also brought to you by Delco Safety Compliance. They are a leading provider of professional fire risk assessments and safety services nationwide. They provide expert impartial advice on all aspects of fire, health and safety compliance. And you can find out more at delcosafety.co.uk. And now here's the brilliant Augie Sanchez. Augie, so it's great to see you out here in Vegas. I mean, we'll start with a congratulations, because this is the hottest place I've ever conducted a boxing interview in the last 25 years. You've got me out in 42 degrees, which in your language is like
115 degrees, dry heat. We're cooking out here.
I'm hoping that the machine stands up to this.
So
how is life? We obviously did an interview. We ran about, I was trying to figure it out, maybe 10 years ago, and life was good. You were over at Barry's boxing gym. Now you're at DLX, but is life good?
Yeah, I think it's great. I'm just keeping busy in the gym, and I got a few pros that I work with. I actually have a fighter who's boxing Friday at the Palms Hotel under the undercard of Sunisa Estrada, and he is 4-0. His name is Subaru Murata. He's a junior featherweight, and this will be my second fight with him. So I'm with the Tekken team. With Mr. Honda.
How's that link up come about? How does the link up come about with Honda? How have you guys started working together?
Secretaries that lives here in Vegas. Works really close with Mr. Honda. Her name is Kimmy Ari.
Okay.
And I've known her for a lot of years, and I met her when Miguel Diaz was training some of the fighters of Mr. Honda and the Tekken team. And I always told her that I wanted to work with her. And every so often I would message her and just kind of see how she's doing and stuff like that. And then out of nowhere, she calls me up and says, you know what, I'm going to be bringing a fighter out here. And Mr. Honda would like to see how you train. And I trained one of his fighters. and he liked the way I worked with him, and now I'm part of that team.
How important is it as a trainer to have been a high-level fighter?
I think it's important, like, because I have the background to know how to get to that level of competition, to be in the rankings and what it takes to be up there, you know. And so, I mean, I know how to train my fighters to get to that next level.
Yeah, sure. And in terms of the experience that you've had in the ring and in training camps, I suppose you learn different signs, different tells, different things from your fighters about how to push them, when to push them, when to sit back. And
sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's where, you know, you don't ever want to, obviously, you have to learn how to pull back your fighter when he's getting ready to start peaking too soon, you know, and or he needs to put, we got to push a little bit harder to get him to get in that condition.
Are you too easy going? I spoke to Kenny Adams the other day, and he's like obviously a Vietnam vet and a real strict disciplinarian. How hard are you on your fighters, or are you friends with your fighters? How does it work?
I don't want to say I'm friends with them, because I mean, this is obviously a business, right? But you do make a connection with your fighters. I think you gotta have some kind of connection with your fighter in order to have confidence in one another, for your fighter to have confidence in you. So I think you got to build that relationship, and your fighter has that respect of your knowledge. So there's always a fine line between a fighter, a coaching, and then trying to separate it as a friend. So I always try not to overstep that balance of trying to be too friendly with my fighters, because then they kind of take advantage of that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Next thing you know, they're trying to tell me how to train.
You lose that bit of respect. Yeah.
So I always try to keep it, you know, try to keep it more professional.
Who trained you for most of your career? Who was training?
It's kind of half and half. My dad was my trainer all the way up until he passed away. Was like my 15th professional fight. And then straight after that, then it was my father-in-law who took over. And then, yeah, so then I ended my career with my father-in-law. So I only had two trainers.
Wow, that's a unique change as well, from father to father-in-law.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, that doesn't come... Talk about boxing in the blood, right?
Yeah, yeah. I know, it was just coincidentally, you know, how it came about.
So was your dad the reason you started boxing in the first place?
Well, I had two older brothers. And my oldest, the oldest brother, he wanted to box. And my dad took him over to the gym, and he found a trainer for my brothers. And then by the time I came around, my dad, he learned some things from the trainer, and he just started coaching me. So, yeah.
Were
so
your kinda, brothers good fighters?
They were okay. I think we all got to, and at least as amateurs, they were okay. We all fought really good competitors that were. You know, really good. Like my oldest brother, he fought Roy Jones, and my middle brother, he fought Oscar De La Hoya, and then I fought Floyd Mayweather. So we've all been to that level, and they've been to that level of a competition. I went the furthest out of the three of us because I stuck with it. I had the hunger. This is what I wanted to do, and I had the discipline for it. And the other two. They really have the one of them had the discipline, but didn't have the skill.
Okay. Okay.
And then the middle one, he had the skill, but he didn't have the discipline.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I see where they're messing up there. So let me try to be the better one.
Wow, that's an incredible line that between you fought Floyd, Oscar, and Roy.
Yeah.
Three generational talents.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm guessing. You're the only one with a victory.
I'm the only one with a victory, yeah.
Okay. In terms of the amateurs, you had like an insane amateur career, didn't you? Like something like 180 and 10 ballpark.
Yeah, something like that, yeah, yeah. And had like 10, 11 national titles. Yeah, and my goal, obviously, to be an amateur fighter was to be an Olympian. So that was that was my dream, was to become an Olympian.
So was that the dream more than being a pro as well at that point? Were you even thinking about a pro career?
I wasn't even thinking about pro.
No.
I was just thinking about trying to be the best I can as an amateur fighter. And like I said, my goal was to become an Olympian. And nothing else, I sparred a lot of pros as I was an amateur, but it would never, I was never interested in, trying to go pro at that moment.
Did you put two and two together, though, and figure that if you did become an Olympian, that's the gravy train financially?
Yeah.
You did do that. You knew
You
knew that
that would be the best way, from what I saw and what I've heard, that basically, you go to Olympics and, you win all these national titles and all this other stuff. That you would have a promoter, you have a management, agent, and that stuff to bring you along.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have those components, then it's kind of like you're starting from the ground, trying to look for around, trying to.
So in terms of your own amateur career, before we get to Floyd, who were some of the other guys that you boxed in the amateurs?
I fought Carlos Navarro, which was a former world champion as a professional fighter, and he was a really good amateur fighter as well. He had a lot of experience as well, from California. I also fought Diego Corrales. I fought him. I fought Carlos Navarro. I beat him in the Olympic trials and the semifinals, and then I also fought Diego Corrales in the Olympic festival. In 1994.
What was Diego like, and how was your relationship with him then and moving forward? Because obviously he became a staple in Vegas, the same as you.
Yeah. He was one of my toughest fighter competitors that I fought. He was just a tough guy. Really tough. He had a really good power. Our fight that we did have was just like a battle.
What happened?
I ended up winning. I ended up beating him. But it was a really good fight.
So, just to give you your props then, that's good, your amateur career, to scalp the likes of Corrales and Floyd Mayweather. That's good going, isn't it?
Yeah. Corrales, obviously, when I'm fighting, as a fighter, I don't even think about, what the names are or anything like that. I just want to win, right?
Yeah,
I just
sure.
wanna, whoever's in my bracket, whoever's in front of me, I want to get that victory. So
was the hype in the amateurs? Was the hype around you, or was the hype around Floyd? Was it
I think
I remember you saying when you went to tournaments that people were saying, "Oh, Floyd's here. Floyd Mayweather's here."
Yeah,
were people saying that about you as well?
Yeah, there was also. There were some tournaments where I went and. There were some coaches that are looking down the bracket and oh man, they took their fighter off because they saw my name on it. And so I had that same respect as well, because I had a lot of fights and I had a lot of knockouts, even as an amateur fighter. I had a lot of respect as well as a amateur fighter.
I was going to ask you that. Had you sparred Floyd before? But did you spar him in training sessions and stuff?
We actually did spar one time.
So this is the fifth fight.
No, well, he was actually boxing at the time. He was boxing at 112 pounds.
Wow. Okay.
And we were at camp. We were getting ready for two. We were getting ready both to fight Mexico. It was USA. It was a dual match, and we ended up sparring one time. For preparation for the dual match against Mexico.
Okay.
And it was actually here in Vegas at the MGM. Yeah. And so we ended up sparring that one time, and I was just too much for him at that moment because I was too big for him, and the coaches didn't want us to spar anymore. And that was the only time I ever sparred him.
And then you have the four fights. So am I right in thinking he won the first, you won the second? Is that right?
Yeah. He won the first. Which no one really knows about. It was at the Nationals in Colorado Springs in the semifinals, and he ended up beating me there. They introduced the scoring system.
The points.
The points. And it kind of it really just
suited his style more than yours.
Yeah, of course. But it wasn't really perfected. I believe it was just because every time after each round, they would post up the scores, And I would look up at the, you know, look up, everyone would look up at the, look up at the screen to see what the score was. And I was behind. I was like, man, I don't know how I'm behind. I'm like, he's not hitting me with anything. You know, so it was just, it was like, I don't know. I just felt like, I would feel like I beat him like the three times he beat me once.
So the second time you beat him?
The second time I beat him in Olympic trials. And then, and then they added a box off that year.
Yeah.
And that's where he ended up beating me.
Two more times.
The first day we fought in the box off, I can say that he beat me. Like it was just, I think he beat me that fight. It was a good fight. It was still like going, you know, we always had, all of our fights were all four of our fights were wars. You know, they were just good fights.
Yeah, I mean, Floyd probably doesn't get the credit he deserves for that because, you know, people look at his fights with Corrales, Gatti, maybe Oscar, but then Robert Guerrero, Canelo, yeah. And they're like, he's not a fighter's fighter.
Yeah.
But then if you see him against Cotto, against Maidana, he had some tear-ups too.
Yeah.
He had it in him to fight, you know, as you guys say over here, the dog, right? He had
yeah,
the dog in him.
Yeah, he did, especially early, like when we fought. I mean, I feel like he threw a lot of punches. He was active. He was trying to knock you out. He was taking more of a chance, a risk. And so, like, when he turned pro, he still had that dog in him. I think later on what happened was that he started having hand injuries.
Sure.
He started having hand injuries, and that's what took away. That's where he started like, okay, he was smart. Because he was like, okay, now how am I going to utilize my attributes? So he started counterpunching and dictating the pace of his opponents. And so that's why he was able to, you know, stay around for so long.
Which Floyd was better? I mean, it's interesting you put it in that perspective because that Floyd was extremely good. But some people say, oh, you know, the pretty boy Floyd version was better than the Money Mayweather. Which one do you appreciate more?
The pretty boy. That's one. Yeah. When we fought after that, he was always the pretty boy. And because he was active.
Yeah.
He took more risk.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, I don't know if his hands were, like I said, he had hand problems, but he, like I said, he was good. He was trying to knock you out. As his fights got more and more, and you know, with better opposition too, that takes effect as well.
Were you what they call in like soap operas and reality TV frenemies, like where you're like friends but enemies? Like, were you guys talking and social and stuff at the same time as you were fighting?
Well, we were good friends, like because before we fought, we were roommates.
Okay.
We were roommates for the camps, and we were roommates for the tournaments for the Olympic festival. So we were roommates, and so I mean we were like buddy buddies. So we hung out all the time and all this other stuff. But then once he skipped the division at 119, he went to the same division I was in. Then he kind of cut ties at that moment. So like he didn't want to have any kind of, you know, conversations or like that. Let's go hangouts. You know, but I mean, I would, you know, say hi to him, whatever, but like, we never hung out after that. Then once he did, once he came back from Atlanta, you know, from the Olympics, you know, then obviously we both were signed for the same, we were both signed with the same promotion.
Top Rank.
With Top Rank, yeah. And, you know, they didn't want to make a fight, you know, with me and him so soon. So eventually his career, you know, went one way and mine went a different way. So you know, and then we just never met up.
So it's interesting you say about the weight class and that kind of stuff. But obviously, you know, I remember, I can't remember when it was, but when we spoke a few years ago, he'd actually been using your gym for the De La Hoya fight as well, didn't he? So, I mean, you guys circled back round and have seen each other plenty of times since, right, I guess?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We ran into each other quite a few times. You know, from when he was fighting, he was in Barry's boxing, and it was kind of, I mean, you know, obviously we know we say hi to him more like that, but I'm not gonna go over there and just kind of, you know, be like a groupie.
Yeah, don't you remember who
yeah.
I am?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's not my thing. So I mean, he knew exactly who I was.
The
I
mutual
mean,
respect.
We have mutual respect for one another, and you know, like I said, I'm not gonna, you know, he made it big. You know, he did great. You know, and
when he was a kid, and like you said, when you were rooming and stuff, did you envisage any of this? What
no,
we see now?
No. I mean, I knew he was good, you know. I don't know how good. I know he'd be like this, what he is now.
Did you know he had that money Mayweather persona in him?
I mean, to be honest, I mean, I remember back then, I really don't think about those things. I mean, he already had like kind of like. I mean, I did notice like he had like management behind him already, that was at the tournaments. Like he had, you know, the money guys there with him, you know. So I mean, they're already taking care of him. Like he already had it. Like,
planned. But did he have that? You know, like he plays like, the role, doesn't
yeah.
he? 24/7,
oh, yeah.
all access,
he, like,
whatever.
Yeah,
like, was he like that behind closed
yeah,
doors?
He was kind of. Like when we're in the room, like he would always be shadow boxing, and he was a very disciplined fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was disciplined. He worked hard.
Right until the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He always worked hard. I mean, everything we did for camps, like he would always be running, always like the first one. He was a fast runner. He was a good runner, and so everything that we did, like he would work hard. He was a hard worker.
Were you living the life?
I mean, not like him. You know, it's just, I mean, two different styles, you know, and I feel like, I don't know, I always feel like, you know, I just feel like sometimes, like, I wasn't destined to be, like where he's at. I just feel like maybe my path was different because it might have changed me as a person. I don't know if I would have been the same person if I had, like, a lot of money like he has. I don't know if I would be married with my wife for 24 years and having five kids. You know, I don't know. And I feel like it's all in God's will. And if I feel like if I would have had that money, I wouldn't be where I'm at today.
Yeah. When you turn pro and you're with Top Rank, you've obviously got this decorated amateur career behind you.
Yeah.
Did you think you were nailed on to be a world champ?
Definitely. I mean, that's always been my I always felt like I obviously had it in me because I was always, like I said about the amateur, I want to become Olympian. And as a pro, I want to get a title, I want a world title. So obviously that was my goal. And, you know, just I'm going to hit back again because I feel like if I don't know if that money would have changed me.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like obviously I tried and tried and tried. I always felt a little short every time. And I felt like it was kind of like God saying, you know, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So it's like, I mean, obviously I wanted it. I mean, I put my heart and soul into this sport. But I always have to look, I have to have that in me to like, it wasn't my plan. Because if I feel like, then it would be driving me crazy, right? I would just be dwelling on it all the time and, you know, trying to make a comeback or any of those kinds of things. So I kind of just kind of let it be, and I feel it wasn't in my books.
With the whole Kid Vegas thing,
yeah.
were you a good time guy in Vegas, or were you a hard-working pro trying to make
it? Definitely. I mean, I was always...
Because it puts off like a party guy vibe, right?
No, definitely. I mean, I feel like, but again, like I had the discipline. I saw my, I feel like me watching my brothers was something like not what not to do.
Yeah, sure.
So I didn't want that. I wanted to live a clean life and give 100% to this sport and try to be the best I can. And so I left alone, like all that parting stuff and all that stuff behind. I don't want to be part of that.
It's interesting because, you know, it's
as easy as it is to get stuck in this place, right? I mean, there's so many ways to
get temptations
yeah, here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
For sure. So I mean, I feel like I definitely had that.
So in terms of your early pro career, you obviously were going around knocking out a lot of guys, building a reputation here in Vegas.
Yeah.
Did you get the fights that you needed and wanted early on? Do you feel like you developed as a pro how you needed to?
I feel like I was going the right path. And No, I mean, I feel like, no disrespect to my father, but I feel like he didn't have the experience that I needed to go to the next level.
Sure.
As a fighter. So I feel like that kind of helped. That kind of helped me back. I had natural talent. I had a power punch, and so I feel like that was a lot of what made me successful was because I had a power punch.
Sure.
So, but I feel like if I were to train myself now, I feel like I would be a killer.
If Augie Sanchez could train Augie Sanchez.
If I were to train myself now, what I know now as a trainer and all the knowledge that I picked up as being so many years, like since I retired, and being on the national team and seeing the international competitions and being surrounded and the things I've learned as a coach, I definitely think I would have been.
Were you thinking that about your dad at the time? Were you doubting him at the time and thinking, you know, in the other corner is Emmanuel Stewart, for instance, and you're like,
To be honest, I really didn't think about that. It was never like, I didn't know any better, really.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I always felt like this, I mean, that I always felt like that was it. You know, I always felt like this is my coach, this is my dad, and there was no other, I couldn't see myself getting trained by anybody else.
Without saying yourself, if you could have worked with anyone realistically, who would you like to have worked with from the people you've seen and experienced over the last 25 years in boxing?
I think what would have complimented my style, would be maybe like Reynoso.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he would have complimented my style. Nacho Bernstein.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Maybe Freddie Roach. I think those guys would have complimented my style. I don't think they would have changed my style. I think they probably would have added more to it.
Sure.
You know, so, or capitalized more on what my attributes were.
Yeah, of course. Makes sense. I mean, the stuff about dads is super interesting anyway because it's topical right now, right? There's so many stories, obviously, with Teofimo and a lot of fighters now. There's plenty of people out there that say that fighters shouldn't have their dads in the corner now.
I think, you know, it's a fine line because, maybe they might be in the same situation I am, that I was in.
Yeah.
You know, and then realize, like, okay, like, you have a different, what I know now, I would be like, man, I would have told my dad, I need to go a different coach, what I know now. And I would have been a man to my dad, man to man, be like, you know, I need to go somewhere else.
How do you think he would have taken that?
I think he would have been hurt by it. He was hurt by it because I had to tell him about my father-in-law. So before my dad passed away, I had to go to my dad and tell him because he didn't have the time, and I had to go tell him that my father-in-law was going to take over. And that was the hardest thing I ever had to do. I mean, was he okay with it at the moment? No. But, I mean, that was my decision I had to make. And, like we didn't talk for, maybe a month. But then he ended up calling me and was like, you know what? You know, I respect your decision. And, you know, you're my son. I love you. And so I'm going to support you. So that was hard. So, I mean, I had to make a choice.
What was his relationship like with your father-in-law? Were they close at the time? Did they become less close? Or
no.
Were they just never on the same path?
No, it's not that. It's just that, I was training at Barry's.
Yeah.
And my dad, I was just training there. And my dad wasn't able to, make it over to the gym because he was working at home or he was doing something. So he wasn't able to make it. So... And I was just like, I'm there at the gym. So my father-in-law was just working on me. So we got a relationship. I felt comfortable with him.
Yeah.
And that's how it happened.
Because they're, whatever the debate is, there's always going to be some outliers and people who are the exception. And when you look at father and sons, look at Joe and Enzo Calzaghe, right?
Yeah.
Joe was an undefeated super middleweight, light heavyweight champion. and his dad had no real pedigree, hadn't fought, was a guitar busker, like traveling around doing crazy stuff.
Right.
And then he opened up a gym, created a few world champs, not just Joe, but Enzo McAnally, Gavin Reese, Nathan Cleverley, and he managed to do it. Look, it's a crazy story, but obviously there were people there that questioned Enzo all the time. But I suppose there's the ethical thing as well, like, will your dad pull you out of a fight if he's your dad, you know, because some of the dads are real hard asses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the pushy parent stuff.
Yeah, right.
There are others who then maybe you could say maybe they are would err on the side of caution if their son is losing a fight and think, no, I don't want to see that. It's different because every case is different, I guess.
Yeah,
so you couldn't make a rule one way or another. I don't know. Like, ethically, where do you sit with it?
Well, I think that like with the Kawasaki, I feel like a lot of these fighters are, they already have like a natural talents, right? They already have like that natural athleticism, you know, that's where like they just get things really easily. And so, and how they're brought and how they're being managed or how they get in the fights, you know, and just building. Now, I don't know if it's so much of a at that moment that their dad is getting better. You know, I think that maybe is this the right fights and this the hard training, or is this the sparring partners that are helping them,
yeah,
or just being surrounded, and you know, the dad's picking up different techniques off of different coaches, which is okay. That's how you learn.
Yeah, sure.
Right, and that's what I'm doing now. I mean, that's what I did. I mean, that's what I do. Right. I think to be a good coach, you have to be a student as well.
Yeah.
In order to advance, to get better.
Yeah, I can't remember. Who was it? Oh, yeah. So I'll tell you what. So we've got a British champion at the moment called Dalton Smith. He's trained by a guy. He's trained by his dad, Grant Smith, who's one of the better coaches in the UK right now. But his dad has recently just sent him over to train with Manny Robles. And he's like, go and learn some new stuff.
Yeah.
That's a good attitude to have, isn't it?
That's a great attitude. I mean, because, I mean, I think at that moment, I feel like there's a place where I think maybe he might realize that he plateaued. Like, what else can I teach my son?
Yeah.
And I think it takes a big person to like, identify that for themselves. A
secure person as well.
Right, secure person. Be like, you know what? I think it'd be better if you go to the States, like you said, go to Robles and learn some different stuff, different techniques, different style.
Yeah.
Because obviously in this sport, you got to have versatility. You have to learn how to box different styles, different techniques in order to advance in the sport. If you're a one-dimensional fighter, you're not going to make it so far. So.
So what happened to Edgar Garcia? What happened to you in that fight? That was your first loss. You were like 15 fights in, something like that, 10 or 15 fights in. And was that the partner of the ways with your dad?
No, I wasn't a partner of the ways. It was just a fight that, I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever seen it, if you've seen it, but it was just one of those situations where you lose focus and you get overconfident and you go into a situation where you're not thinking and you're losing your skill, where you're trying to just kind of knock somebody out and you're not focusing on what he's doing. We're focusing on what you're doing, and I ended up getting caught with a shot, and because before that I put him down. Right, I put the kid down, and he gets back up. I go carelessly, go to him, and he just throws a punch, and catches me on the chin, and knocks me down, and I get up, and wobbled, and they stop the fight. So that's how it happened.
So you were too overconfident.
Yes. And you know what I teach with my fighters is not to be overconfident. If you hurt a fighter, don't go over there trying to swing. That's the worst thing you can do, because that's like a cat in a corner that's just gonna react to anything you do. So you have to, you know, what I teach them is to feint. When you hurt a fighter, you feint, stay back, keep your distance, because they're gonna throw something. They're gonna throw something crazy.
Yeah.
Because that's their reaction, is to throw, try to get away from you. Because then, yeah, so you feint, make them throw, then you can counter, and not being over, you know, not being careless.
Yeah. Lesson learned. Move on.
Lesson learned. So yeah.
You touched upon it at the start. You and Floyd were being kept apart by Top Rank, with the idea probably that 20, 25 fights in, you guys would meet. You'd imagine, right? You'd imagine. Was that how it was laid out to you with Top Rank? Look, we've signed these guys, 1A and 1B from the Olympic trials. You're going to fight down the line. Was that the plan? Well,
me and Floyd?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it was early when he first turned pro. I wanted to fight him, but it was just, obviously it was just too soon for two guys, up and coming guys, to fight each other so soon. So basically, like the Top Rank was like, okay, you know what, that ain't gonna happen right now, because he's going this way, I'm going this way, and so and he ended up moving up to a division of 130 pounds, to a higher division, and. So basically, yeah, it's kind of dwindled away.
Was Bob your point man at Top Rank? Was Bob the one you were speaking to, or were you speaking to?
It was more
Bruce.
Bruce
Trampler.
Uh huh.
You had a big jump up to fight veteran Jorge Paez, who was known as a bit of a showman. What was Jorge Paez like?
That was a great opportunity to fight him. It was an honor to fight him, actually, because growing up, I used to see him fight. And I always told my dad, I'm like, man, that guy's good. And, you know, I like his flamboyance, his good defense, his slickness. And then it was kind of surreal because I was in the ring with him. So it was really an honor to be in the ring with him. But I mean, it was obviously, we're both fighting for the same reason, trying to get to the next level, trying to fight for world title. But it was a good fight. I was honored to be in there with them.
Then you had a couple more big wins at a high level. So Nestor Lopez, Daniel Jimenez, in Vegas. When you've beaten those guys, and Paez included, are you now thinking, okay, we're right back on track after the Garcia fight, and you know things are going to happen?
No, sure. Here. Yeah, I feel like I learned a lot from that from that fight, and obviously I just moved on from it, and just just racking the wins up, and you know, yeah, those wins that I fought with Paez and Nestor Lopez and those guys, and Daniel Jimenez, those fights, helped me get to the fight of, you know, with the Hamed fight.
You know, just reflecting on Garcia, and sorry to dwell on this one, but sometimes when a fighter loses, obviously they go into a period of depression or they're down or whatever. You seem like you were just a little bit mad at yourself and like,
no,
what the hell are you doing? Like, what did you do? Like,
it wasn't because of skill.
You weren't left questioning yourself. Yeah. You were just saying that was stupid.
Yeah. It was just stupid decision, you know, and then the ring just being overconfident, you know. Yeah. And it happens. It happened with Sergio Mora, right? Sergio Mora and who's the guy he fought? Where he got overcome. Was it Jermaine Taylor or something like that?
Was it? Okay.
I don't know if it was Jermaine Taylor. Anyway, so yeah, he ended up catching the guy, or he ended up getting dropped because he came in carelessly.
Right.
And you know, it happens to a lot of fighters.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, and it, like you said, when these guys are backed up, they come out swinging. I mean, we had obviously Nigel Benn in the UK, who is a big one for that, like famous. Like, if you hurt him, you better watch out because he's going to come out swinging.
Yeah.
So you did mention Naz there. A couple more fights after him, and as you got Naz, when was Naz first on your radar? Were you eyeing him up from across the pond, thinking this dude is is going to get it from me at some point.
Well, I know, obviously it was just obviously, because everyone wanted to fight him because I mean he was in our division, my division, the featherweight division, and he was the number one. You know, he was,
and not just a number one, but a cash cow.
A cash cow, yeah. You fight him, it was like you're gonna get a good payday. But obviously, that wasn't. I mean, obviously, I got paid pretty good for that fight, but it wasn't really the reason why I wanted to fight him. I wanted to fight him because I wanted that title. If it would have been anybody, whoever had a title, I wanted to fight. That's the whole reason why we're fighting, right? Is to get to our world title. Fight for the title, get the title, and so that one was brought to the table, and I obviously jumped on that. It was a great opportunity, and I almost had him. it was good.
He'd made a splash in the U.S. fighting Kevin Kelly, starting off the Flushing Flash.
Yeah.
Did you know Kevin? Did you meet
him? Yeah, of course. Yeah, we were sparring partners. Yeah, we sparred a lot of rounds together. I think it was before he fought Pius.
Okay.
I mean, not Pius, Naz. Naseem Hamed. Yeah, before he Naz. So, okay. Yeah, before he fought Naseem Hamed, we sparred a few rounds.
So what did you make of Kelly Naz? I mean, people say it was one of the great fights of a generation, wasn't it? Four-round shootout.
Yeah, mine was better. but no, it was a good fight. It was a good fight.
Was Naz on your radar before that? And or was it just right around that time where he was? Because that was the start of the HBO deal and everything else.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. It was just something like I wasn't. To be honest, I wasn't really thinking about it because I was just wanting to keep building. Right. Yeah. I just wanted to keep building, and obviously that's the ultimate goal. I saw him. I always, to be honest, I was thinking about fighting like Barrera or Morales around those guys. Those were my radar.
Yeah.
But that one obviously was, I felt, he was in the mix, and I wanted to fight him too, but he wasn't really like the number one guy I wanted to fight for some reason. But I wanted to fight him. But I wanted to fight Eric Morales or Barrera.
But with regards to Naz, he was one of those guys, sort of everything he did was wrong, but it was right kind of stuff. You must have thought, I can expose those holes, I just need a chance, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like I did expose them, straight after that, Marquez fought him, right?
So Barrera.
Yeah, Barrera, yeah. Barrera fought him, and they said that you looked at the video when I fought him. And a lot of people said I exposed them, that fight. So even if it was just a four-round fight, but I mean, there was a lot of damage that was done.
In your fight.
Yeah.
So I remember as well when we talked about Naz before, yes, he was the cash cow. Yes, he was a money fight. But you really rated him highly as well, didn't you? He wasn't just a pair of leopard skin trunks or whatever. You rated him as a fighter highly, didn't you?
Oh, for sure. I mean, he was... look at his record. He was 33-0 with 30 knockouts. So, I mean, he definitely had a lot of power. He had a lot of charisma. He had a lot of flamboyance. He was hard to hit for some people. he was definitely, I mean, he had a lot of power. He was more of a counter puncher. He had a lot of power. So, I mean, if he hits you, you're done.
What are your memories about the fight? Do you remember everything?
Yeah. I was seeing all the punches he was throwing. Like I said, he was a counter puncher. So I was feinting. I was throwing my jab. I was countering a counter puncher because I was making him throw. So then I would counter him. And So he hit me and with some pretty big punches, and and I hit him. So I mean, it was a good fight, nothing to take away from him. He was definitely a powerful puncher.
The biggest punch you faced?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, he hit me one time. He was actually right at the bell of the first round, rang my ear, and he says, "Oh, did that hurt?" As I'm walking.
So you can hear that. Yeah, yeah.
What'd you say? So I remember him. He was a good, good showman. So
was he? What did you get to speak to him away from him saying that after the first round, or have you spoken to him at all since? In the 20 odd years since.
No, there was actually somebody I feel like I forget who, but they wanted to connect us together to talk to each other.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, if we ever got, you know, we ever seen each other now, we would talk with each other, of course.
Yeah, yeah. There was after that, there were quite a few sort of distressing images of you, weren't there? I seem to remember being on a magazine cover of you being on your back and stuff. There was, like, I've got, what was the thing? Did you go to hospital?
Yeah, I was only for just because of from the eye.
Was it?
Yeah, there was no, like,
no residual damage.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And you fought again 5 months later. Were you, you know, you said after the Garcia fight, it was just a mistake, something stupid.
Yeah.
How about after the Nas fight? What were you thinking then? Are you thinking that world title now seems like an awfully long way away, or are you thinking dust yourself off and let's go again?
No, after the Nassim Hamed fight, I fought Espinoza the next fight.
Yep.
And a lot of people felt that I probably shouldn't have because he was a 2-time world champion. And they thought it was too soon to fight him. But that fight elevated my experience.
Yeah.
So I wanted that fight. And I wanted to take that fight. And it's funny because they were actually thinking about making an NABO fight or a USBA fight or something like that. And for some reason, they didn't make it a title fight for one of those.
So that would have been a title.
That would have been a title fight again.
Yeah, something on the mantelpiece. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So for some reason they didn't make it a title fight. So we ended up fighting, and you know that I feel like that was my best performance.
Yeah.
If you see that Espinoza fight, because I displayed patience, I displayed counterpunching, I displayed pressure, you know, calmness. I feel like that was my best performance as my boxing career.
By the way, you obviously said about the switch from your father to father-in-law. What was the straw that broke the camel's back for you and your dad? What was the tipping point where you were saying, what made you say, I've got to go? Was there something that,
no,
was there a flashpoint?
No, because I was saying, like, my dad, he couldn't make it to the gym, and I was kind of working.
Oh, so it was more logistical.
I was working at Barry's, helping the amateur program, and still fighting, and.
It wasn't like a bad performance, or it wasn't questioning him or anything else. It was like that. It was literally just like, Pat was there at the right time.
Pat was there helping me out.
Yeah.
And I was learning different stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And
so it was like an organic change from your perspective.
Yeah,
it's
kind of, yeah.
But maybe a bit too abrupt for him.
Right. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, to some point, I don't think he was really shocked about it, because I wasn't training. Training with him.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I really don't think, I mean, it was upset of the situation, obviously, but at the end, I feel like he knew, like, that was the best thing for me.
Could they have worked together, or would that never have happened?
No, I don't think so. It was like, you know, it wouldn't have, because the whole reason was because he didn't have the time.
That would have been a first, someone with two dads in the corner.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been a first.
A father-in-law.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, that's a really interesting period. It's a really, like, that part of your career, the fact that you've had the father and father-in-law is insane.
Yeah.
Especially here in Vegas, where there's so many different coaches.
Yeah, yeah. I know, it was.
You beat Jimenez again, and then you fought John Michael Johnson. That was the last fight. Why was that the time to wrap it up? Because you're only two fights removed from what you said was the best performance of your career.
Yeah. Again, it just felt like, I don't know, I felt like, I don't know. It was this. I had good performances after the Nassim Hamed fight, and then I don't know. I feel like after the Jimenez fight, Danny Jimenez fight, then John Michael Johnson. I don't know what it was that day. It was because we had a good training camp. I don't know what it was that day. It was just something was off. I don't know. It was just something like something wasn't right. Because obviously that wasn't my.
Well, psychologically, you weren't.
I wasn't there. Yeah, yeah, it was just something that wasn't. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the environment that was not right with me. So for some reason, it was. I remember it was really cold. It was cold, and we were back in the dressing room. It was like we're outside. So I don't know exactly what it was. It could have been multiple things that day.
Did you know that day that was the last fight of your career?
No, I didn't know. I didn't go in there to lose.
No, but afterwards, did you think this is it now? This is the end of the line?
After the fight?
Yeah.
After that fight, it was, I felt like because of how it happened. I don't know if you probably saw the fight, but it was just like, it wasn't, like I said, it was a lot of things going on in my mind that day, and something didn't feel right. And going in that ring didn't feel right. And that was the outcome of what happened, right? And after that fight, like, it didn't sit well with me after that fight. But I just didn't have that urge. I didn't have the urge to get back into fighting again.
But did you wait for it to come back? Well, did you wait for that motivation to say, come on, get back in there?
Yeah, I did. And I did start training again. I started sparring a little bit here and there. But it was just like that fire.
Yeah, the important fire.
Yeah, the fire.
You gotta have that.
The fire that I needed to like actually get in there and want to do it.
Yeah.
Get up in the morning, run. You know, do the whole thing, right? It was just something that was missing, and I felt like I didn't have that. I didn't have that spark, that fire to get back in there to start competing again. And I felt like it was just that time to say enough.
To get off the roller coaster.
Even though I was young, I had a great career. I had some good fights, a good knockout ratio, all that stuff. And all the people, people always ask me, why'd you quit so early? It was just something like in me that was just, I didn't want to get back into it again. Like for me to compete. Straight away, I just started coaching. And I just felt comfortable there.
Literally straight away, yeah. Like within weeks. Months.
Because I was always kind of helping out in the gym.
Yes.
Right? Okay. And, so I was just kind of like was going back to the gym. I was kind of training here and there. You know, like I said, I did kind of get back into it again. And I sparred a few times. Did well, but it was just like I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
It was just something in me like.
A switch.
Yeah. Just didn't want to do it. You know, like you gotta have, in this sport, you got to have the fire. You gotta have like that desire to like get in there, and if you don't have that fire, and you're trying to go in that ring, that's how you can get hurt.
Yeah, so it's something
you're
I've
not
seen
fighting for the right reasons.
It's something I've seen on social media a bit recently. Is discipline is getting it done, motivation is wanting to do it, and kind of for boxing, you gotta have both.
Definitely.
You gotta have that purpose.
You gotta have a recipe.
Yeah.
Right. It's an ingredient.
Yeah.
If something is missing in that ingredient of your boxing that you're wanting to compete, then if something's missing, you shouldn't be doing it.
Hmm.
If something's missing.
By the way, since there's been so much talk about CTE and damage from football and the concussion crisis, and you obviously know so many ex-fighters who would have struggled in life after boxing, neurologically, Do you feel now kind of lucky that you got out when you did?
No, and that's exactly what, and I felt like...
Because people weren't talking about it when you retired and think, oh, you know, he could be one of the lucky ones. Now it looks like a very wise move.
No, definitely. You know, and it's weird because I feel like I did think about that at moments, obviously, after my fight, and trying to get back into it. And I feel like I didn't want to be labeled. I don't want to be labeled as a fighter who stayed in it too long.
Who gets punch drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Exactly. I don't want to be labeled as that. I wanted to be a fighter like, okay, he left at the right time. He left on his terms.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like I did. I left on my terms. I left when I wanted. I left the game, I feel like I had. Even though I lost my last fight, but I left ahead. I still have my brain. I still know where I live. I still have my kids. I'm able to function.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm able to... You know, work. I've been able to, you know, do my job. So I mean, I'm doing good.
I love that gambling analogy because I use it a lot on this podcast, and I use it, you know, sometimes in life. I think, you know, a friend of mine selling his business right now, and I'm like, well, are you up or are you down? Because if you're up, it's a good time to go.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. No, and that's what, just like here in Vegas, right? It's a gamble, and that's what, like, a temptation. Like, you want to keep going and going and going. So you have no one to fold them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's good. You know, that's the thing. I think that's what happens to a lot of fighters. They need to know when to say when is enough.
So Naz and Floyd crossed paths in Big Bear once and talked about fighting, and they got into it a little bit and stuff. Who would have won had they fought at featherweight?
I think Floyd. I think Floyd was just too
rounded, maybe.
I think he was smarter.
Okay.
He was smarter. I feel like he was. I think he would have been more strategic. I feel like he would have been more. I think he had more to his arsenal than Naz. I think he's really good at what he does. Naz, like, he's a really good slip and counter, you know, jump in with punches, power punches. He had that. But I think Floyd had the good counter punching. He had the good ring generalship. And I feel like that's why it would have made him, I think he would have won that fight.
Would it have been a good fight? As in, not even, but interesting, like, a fun fight.
I think
a good fight,
exciting
fight.
No, definitely. I think, because, who knows, because it would have been maybe because he... Two counter punchers.
Exactly. You know, so exactly. And so, you know, sometimes Naz looked messy, didn't he? Like,
yeah.
Cesar Soto, and
right.
There's some fights where you're like, oh,
yeah,
not great. And even Floyd wasn't always dazzling either.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It all depends what Floyd, right? The pretty boy Floyd or the money boy. So it all depends what time period they would have fought.
Yeah.
You know, so it would have been the basis on that as well.
By the way, we did. Let me see if you give me the same answer as you did a few years ago. Naz obviously got a bronze in the Olympics. He lost to Serafim Todorov. If you'd got to the Olympics instead of Naz, what would you have got? Floyd. Floyd.
Oh.
My bad.
Oh.
So yeah, no. Floyd obviously won a bronze, lost to Serafim Todorov in the 96 Olympics.
I would have beat that guy.
You would have beaten Todorov.
Yeah, I would have beat him. He would have. I think he would have, like, he would be made to order for my style. For my style, I would have. I think I would have probably maybe even stopped him, because I had the power. Floyd don't know how to. He didn't have the power like I have.
In terms of the Olympics, by the way, obviously you were there watching your rival go out and do it. I'm assuming you were there watching it. Could you watch, or was it too raw? And
yeah, I didn't bother watching
any of them, because you would have been amateurs with those guys. Were there guys you were friends with, and you were like, oh, I'm gonna check in on
it, was
see so and so.
The funniest thing is, like, I don't know, it's like, it was so weird, because, like, in that moment and in that time period, like, obviously I didn't make, like, relationships with these fighters, like, in camps and stuff like that. But, like, once the box up happened, and I ended up turning pro, like, I just kind of, like, that was just in the past. Like, I I just moved on from that. I'm going to go start my professional career. And that's what I did. like if I would have saw him in Vegas or whatever, like, yeah, oh, what's up, man? I, you know, talk to him, whatever. But I don't know, it was weird. Like, it's like I didn't watch.
Was that because you were sore over not going?
Possibly.
Rather than not interested, you were like, it should have been me.
I think that
it's going to hurt too much to watch, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like at that period, that time period, I was, like, my agent, Cameron Duncan, like, was talking to me about, you know, going pro with Top Rank. And the whole thing was just basically, like, what's my next step?
Were you pulling for Floyd? Even if you weren't watching, were you hoping I'd bring it back for the U.S.?
Sure. Yeah, of course, sure. Yeah, if you
sure, want, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. No, basically, yeah, good for, you know, basically, like, you know, obviously, I was like, you know, forget it. I mean, I wish I was there, you know.
I suppose that's a bit of an unfair question, isn't it? There's probably 5% of you wanted to, even if you were in denial, would say, yeah, I hope he gets knocked out in the first round. Not knocked out,
not knocked out,
but
I mean,
like, you know, eliminated in the yeah, first round, because if you picked me, I could have done that.
Yeah.
And yeah, even if you didn't want to admit that, it was probably in there somewhere.
Maybe, yeah, possibly. They would have been like, you know what, yeah, I would have beat that guy that he would have lost, that he lost yeah, to. So, yeah.
Still, it's interesting.
But like I said, like, it's always like, it seems like my whole career was like that, though. It's like one step. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Just one more.
So say you beat in Naz.
Yeah.
I suppose this goes back
there
to
what
you said.
There would have been a rematch. There was a rematch clause.
Okay. If he'd wanted it, because, you know, if you'd taken him out early,
yeah,
would he have wanted it? Because he felt your power for sure, right?
Definitely. I know he felt my power. So, I mean, I don't know if he would have. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he would have wanted a rematch, even if I would have beat him. Because I mean, it was a good fight.
Would you have got more money? Like, would you have been?
I got the money that he got for me.
Do you reckon? Yeah, yeah.
Probably. Most likely.
Do you know the details of that? Do you know that you would have got more than him, for instance, in the rematch?
I don't know exactly what the specifics were, but I'm pretty sure.
Have you kept your memorabilia? Gowns, shorts.
Oh yeah, yeah. I got my trunks. Yeah, I got my trunks and my. I got
from everything or from every fight.
Yeah.
And tell me about your wife. It's Dawn, right?
Yeah.
So you have a great love story, right? Which not many fighters can attest to. You know, when I interview old fighters, I've been married a couple of times. You know, they're here, there, and everywhere, and kind of flaky. But you and Dawn have been together for years and years.
Yeah.
Is that her calling you now? Is that her calling you right now?
No. It's just like, I gotta train my guys at the gym.
Okay, but, so let's just finish up on this then. But she was a ring card girl for one of your early fights. Did you get her that gig, or was that kind of where you met?
No, that's I mean, it was just kind of like it was actually here in Vegas at the it used to be called the Showboat.
Oh yeah, I stayed there once.
Yeah, it was at the Showboat, and it was an amateur fight. I was trained, obviously, by my dad. We trained at Golden Gloves Gym, and she had her gym with her dad from Barry's Boxing. And so we were both there at the went to the same boxing show at the Showboat. That was Golden Gloves Gym was hosting it.
Okay.
And I don't know how it came about, but her mom introduced me to her. Her mom did. And so I ended up meeting her there at the Showboat. She was only seven. Yeah, she was seven. I was 9 years old. She was seven. I was nine. And then from there on, basically, I used to always see her at the local boxing shows. And as I got older, you know, we used to always catch up at the fights. We never kind of like talked outside of the fights until actually when I was in probably middle school, like eighth grade, seventh grade.
Wow! And then you started dating, and now you're married with five kids.
Then we started dating a little bit here and there in middle school, and then we started dating seriously when she was in high school. I think she was a junior or senior in high school.
And now, in terms of your marriage, are you up, Or are you down?
Oh yeah, we've been married for 24 years now, with five beautiful kids, and so we're doing great.
Any of the kids fighting?
None of the kids really, you know. I showed all my kids like the boxing stance and the basic punches and stuff like that, but none of them wanted to do it.
You must be grateful for that.
Yeah. I have my youngest one. He's 2 years old now. He just turned two, and I show him, you know, boxing stance right now and punches, and sometimes he'll sit with me and watch him boxing. So who knows?
He's not Augie, is he?
Yeah, he's Augie Jr.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. All right, Baby Vegas.
Well, look, it's already done. Get the t-shirts printed. Get the shorts done.
Yeah.
All right, Augie, thank you so much for making the time, man. I'm grateful.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
That was really good from Augie. What a nice guy, and a coach who's very well regarded in Las Vegas and who was a terrific fighter and who has some incredible memories from both the amateurs and the pros. Huge thanks to my sponsors, Hanson Lee Resourcing. They were voted the UK's best specialist insurance sector recruitment firm at the Corporate Excellence Awards. Not only do Hanson Lee find you the best people, they'll help you retain them, and you can find out more at hansonlee.com. We're also brought to you by Delco Safety Compliance. They are a leading provider of professional fire risk assessments and safety services nationwide. They provide expert, impartial advice on all aspects of fire health and safety compliance, and you can find out more at delcosafety.co.uk. So huge thanks to my sponsors. You can support this podcast on Patreon by visiting patreon.com/TrisDixon, where you can hear the ins and outs from my week in Las Vegas last week for Crawford Spence. Big thank you to you for listening, and to Augie Sanchez, and we'll be back next week.